Western New York is looking for a serial robber.
Someone out there may know this person.
Major news about a troublesome overpass in Tonawanda.
We're trying to fix stupid.
Talks about a convention center move forward.
86% of those who responded directly to the question support a investment in saying we should stay in the convention and visitors business and we need to invest in our facility or build a new one.
And a Buffalo firefighter is on the up and up.
I'm feeling better and getting better every day.
716 Week in Review was recorded at 3:04 p.m. on this Friday, March 15. Things might be different by the time you're hearing this. You can always stay up to speed with the latest coverage of your Western New York news at the top and bottom of every hour on WBEN, WBEN.com, and the Radio.com app. Let's get into this week's show. Hey, thanks for tuning in to this week's edition of 716 Week in Review. I'm your host, WBEN's Mike Baggerman. We break down your top news stories of the week in our podcast. Help us out with this. Rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes. Tell a friend. Follow us on Twitter at NewsRadio 930. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Mike Baggerman. New episodes are recorded for you every single Friday. Last week, what time did I have the podcast out? What was it, like 9 o'clock in the morning? And this week, probably by the time it's posted, it'll be close to around 4:35-ish. Regardless, we really appreciate you tuning in as we have another busy, busy, busy week on the podcast. I feel like we were at a lot of different places in our listening area, or maybe it was just a lot of really strong stories this week. We're going to be highlighting four of the top news stories of the week, and we'll start at both Erie and Niagara counties. A white man who was wearing a black ski mask was reportedly connected to at least 12 different robberies around Western New York over the last month. Some of the recent ones including a robbery that happened on Monday at a Sunoco gas station on Niagara Falls Boulevard in Tonawanda. Later, that same man apparently robbed a Red Apple in Amherst, and then again he struck Wednesday at a Dash's Market on Colvin Boulevard. Tonawanda Police Lieutenant Thomas Haynes was also at that robbery on Wednesday to detail this latest example and why this guy has been so tough to find.
As you know, we had a robbery at the Dash's Market this morning. This is the 12th robbery in the last 3 weeks that seems to be linked to the same suspect or suspects. This morning, a male dressed in dark clothing, wearing a ski mask, brandishing a gun, did walk into the store, demanded cash. No one was injured. The male did flee on foot from the scene. The schools were notified by the time school began. There was no cause for alarm. We had cleared the area, brought in a canine for a track.
In any of these instances when this man or suspects, as you've said, have gone into these places and robbed them, has anybody been hurt?
No one's been hurt, and, you know, certainly let's hope that this stops, that we don't have any further robberies, but there have been no injuries to this point.
Why has this guy been so difficult to catch?
Well, it spans between two counties, so the town of Tonawanda has been involved several times, also the town of Amherst, Village of Kenmore, Wheatfield, City of Niagara Falls. So this is a pretty large area that we're talking about here. Certainly, when someone's moving from spot to spot, it ups the ante. But on that note, we're working together. We're working collaboratively to locate this person and bring him to justice.
Can you speak to anything that you know where he may live, where he may be? I know, obviously, if you knew where he lived, yeah, you'd have him by now.
Well, you know, certainly when we speak to the media, you know, our primary goal is to make sure that public safety is good. Obviously, we have a school that's just right down the street, and that obviously money is money, but that's our primary concern. So we didn't want our children or our residents affected by this. As far as, you know, giving away keys to the castle and letting you know what we're investigating, that's something I can't do. It's an ongoing investigation. Again, we're working together with several agencies to bring this person to justice.
Has it always been money, or have there ever been items being taken or anything beyond that?
Yeah, it the primary goal of this person or persons has been cash.
You want people to
do if they happen to be in the store shopping when...
Let's speak on two notes. So if you're in a situation and the hairs on the back of your neck raise because something doesn't seem right or you think a robbery is going on, don't intervene. You know, that's what the police are for. You know, a human life is not worth any sum of money, obviously. So don't attempt to intervene. Let the police do that. Be a good witness or, you know, if you can do so, leave the area and just get us information. That's what we're looking for. You know, furthermore, someone out there may know this person.
With this robbery, sorry.
And if you do, and if you have information regarding that, well, we want to know about it. And you can contact us at the police station. Our non-emergency number is 879-6613. We'll get you directly to the front desk of the Town Tonawanda Police Department. As I put out in the media release before, you can contact any of the agencies.
With this incident today, how many people were in the store?
So it occurred approximately at 6:45 this morning. From my understanding, there were very few people in the store at the time, mostly employees. I'm not even sure if there were any customers. MO is the previous robberies, demanded cash, and once he received the cash, he fled the store on foot.
Lieutenant,
a handgun was displayed.
Lieutenant, how many different agencies are looking for this guy?
Well, if I do it off the top of my head, it'll be the Town of Tonawanda Police Department, the Village of Kenmore, there's two, Amherst is three, Niagara County Sheriff's Department's been a great partner, and there's four, City of Niagara Falls Police Department makes five. We're all aware of it. Today we were assisted by Buffalo with their canine on the track. There was information that we may have pinned down the subject. That's not true. And I want to reiterate that the school was never in jeopardy at this point, or we would have had a lockout or a lockdown. That was never the case. And again, so not just the aforementioned agencies that are actively investigating it, we're all aware, and we'll all be looking for this person.
Has this person striking at any specific time, or has he been all around the clock throughout the days?
Yeah, and it's been, as far as establishing a pattern on the time, that's something that I specifically wouldn't want to speak to, but I will state to you that it's been during the early daylight hours up to the early evening hours.
And especially that was the incident on Monday, right? He had the Niagara Falls Boulevard in the morning. If it was that same person.
Well, they were just about 13 hours apart.
And one more time, you know, what type of description does this man have and what should people do?
Again,
if
we're looking for a white male, typically wearing dark clothing, as a hoodie most of the time, wearing a black ski mask.
Okay, so you just heard from Lieutenant Thomas Haynes. Now, this man may have been caught after an arrest was made following a robbery at a Gulf Express that happened that night, that Wednesday night on Main Street. Police arrested 45-year-old Justin Robert Jenkins and also his 45-year-old wife, Heather. Both were charged with robbery in the second degree. Tonawanda police said, though, that their investigation remains ongoing. They'll let us know if it was, in fact, Jenkins, both of them, that were involved in these robberies. Again, we don't know. We don't have anything confirmed. But let's point out an obvious thing here. There haven't been any more armed robberies in these regions that we know. But again, we continue to monitor this. Tonawanda police said as soon as they know, we'll know as well. Coming up, major news about a troublesome overpass in Tonawanda.
We're trying to fix stupid.
We'll see what stupid they're talking about. Up next, this is 716 Week in Review.
A new morning with Susan Rose and Brian Mazurowski. It's more than just the headlines.
Political strategist Michael Caputo is in studio. We're breaking down the Jeff Sessions testimony. Michael, what's the impact?
I don't think this testimony from Attorney General Sessions is going to have an impact on the administration.
A new morning goes in depth twice each hour at 15 and 45.
Two of the three London attackers have been identified. One man seen in a TV documentary where he expressed his extremist views.
The attackers seen in video in the midst of their terror.
In depth at 15 and 45, powered by the Vinyl Outlet, because we know vinyl. Part of a new morning. Weekday mornings 5 till 9 on News Radio 930 WBEN.
We are back on 716 Week in Review. I'm your host, WBEN's Mike Baggerman. For the last 20 years, the CSX overpass on Yonge Street in Tonawanda has been a headache for nearby residents, business owners, and frankly, the city themselves. That's because the overpass, which is 11 feet 6 inches, doesn't really get read by truck drivers. The semis and box trucks frequently hit the overpass and get stuck. It's caused quite a problem for residents over the last couple of decades, and City of Tonawanda Mayor Rick Davis made a major announcement on it on Thursday morning. Here he is speaking with Brian Mazurowski live on WBEN.
Pretty much the trucks won't be able to travel on Yonge Street between the Fillmore Street Bridge and the Vietnam Veterans Twin City Memorial Highway on and off ramp.
Now, all of this happening after a number of trucks have hit that specific bridge on Yonge Street, that CSX bridge. How many trucks have hit just in the past couple of weeks? And what made this decision, or what made you come to this decision? What was the final straw?
It's been three strikes of that bridge, and over the course of a few weeks, and you know, everything that we were hearing is that a lot of these truckers weren't either paying attention to the road, and or their truck GPS. So, I mean, I was on the radio. I think it was last week, saying you can't fix stupid. Well, we're trying to fix stupid. So, you know, I've asked our police department to step up patrols of that area. Now, we're going to have a zero tolerance policy. If we see a truck, doesn't matter what they're doing between the Fremont Street Bridge and the Twin City Memorial Highway, they're going to get ticketed.
Is that effective immediately?
That is immediately.
Okay, so taking effect now. And do you expect this to be a permanent ban?
Well, it's going to remain in place until our traffic and safety board can kindly thoroughly vet all of the options that we have available to us to try to correct this problem as best we can. And you know, we'll see where that goes.
That afternoon, I went over to the Yonge Street overpass and chatted with Cheryl Ward. Now, Cheryl's been gaining a little bit of notoriety lately on social media because three times over the last month or so, she's posted security cameras. She owns a business called Rad's Fine Automotive. It's right next to where the bridge is. Every time a truck hits the bridge, she'll post a video on it. She gave a lot of them to us. You can see them over at WBEN.com. And after the mayor made the announcement on Thursday, I went over to talk to her to get her thoughts about it and to understand how big of a problem this is for
her. I have been here for 20 years, since 1999.
So since 1999, Cheryl, this has been a problem for you. Trucks going and hitting this bridge right here, the CSX bridge.
Yes.
Rick Davis announced on Thursday morning that no more trucks are going to be allowed. I want to get your initial reaction when you heard that news.
I'm very happy about that news. Very, very happy about that news. I'm just concerned about how they're going to enforce it to stop them from coming down here. Because, you know, they may say that like 57 trucks hit the bridge, but they're not telling you how many have come down here that they've had to back up, how many that have come down here and tapped the bridge, how many have gone down the little side streets to avoid getting to the bridge. And it's not fair for all the neighbors around here. My friend Cindy here, they have driven over her lawn. They have gone through her driveway, 3 feet down on her driveway. They've taken siding off. Her walls are cracking because they're always going that way to avoid the bridge. So it's not just 57 hitting the bridge. There's a lot more involved in it than the 57 that have hit the bridge.
If I'm not mistaken, later this month you were supposed to be addressing the Common Council about your concerns, right? How does everything that happened today change what you plan to do?
At this point, I still plan on going because I want to see exactly what they're going to do to enforce this. But if I do not have to go to complain, I will be there to thank them.
Do you think that this will actually work?
I'm optimistic right now. I don't know because I don't know exactly what they're doing to enforce it.
How satisfying is it for you, though, personally, to know that every time a truck hits one of these bridges, you have a security camera that's always following all this, and because you constantly told people, hey, here's another idiot that hit this bridge, let's publicize it, everyone in Western New York sees your videos because you send them to the media stations, and then all of a sudden something gets done. That's got to be relieving in some sense, right?
It is. It is. That's why I made sure I was getting them out there. It was just ridiculous. And they say three of them hit in the last 3 weeks. But what the press doesn't know is a tree fell down on Yonge Street, and Yonge Street was closed for 3 days. So out of that three for 3 weeks was really more like 2.5 weeks. Mm-hmm. We had three of them.
You were taking videos of the bridge today. Trucks mm-hmm. were still going through it, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What did you see? Explain what you had shown.
I saw a semi go underneath the bridge. He did clear it. But in all fairness, no signs are up and nothing's been enforced. So I can't really judge that at this point. They had just, you know, told us that no trucks on Yonge Street.
What have been the conversations that you've had with the mayor, Rick Davis, as well as the council here about what's been going on here? And have they reached out to you to address these concerns? You're just finding out Thursday morning about this.
Rick Mayer, I've never spoke to about this. The council I have spoke to, and they invited me to come to the safety meeting on March 25th. But before I got there, the news broke. Broke everything and moved mountains for us, and I appreciate every bit of that.
This is radio. Could you explain to people how close you are to the bridge?
15 feet, maybe. I mean, when a truck hits that bridge, you think you're going to have a heart attack. It is so loud. It's obnoxious. And then if you get those shipping containers that hit, those are all metal. And that's what hit a couple of weeks ago. And those are the ones that fire me up, that make me get crazy, because you know they have to be doing some damage. You got metal on metal.
How does it affect your business here?
Oh, it's affected it highly, real bad. Because they closed down the street, so now I'm conducting business from the center of Yonge Street. If a customer has an appointment, if a customer needs to pick up their car, they can't. They have to park somewhere, walk over here, and then I can go get their vehicle and bring it here, or I can take their vehicle to them.
That's not a good way to conduct business.
No, it's not. And this has been 20 years of this.
What about with CSX, though? Have you ever reached out to them and say...
I have. They are the worst neighbors you ever want to have.
Tell me about it.
And I'm not afraid to say it. They are horrible. I reached out to them when an 11-pound piece of metal fell off of that bridge on both sides. And come to find out, it was for the drain the water off. And they said, well, we have 5,000 some odd bridges, and we'll put you on a list. I said, okay. So then, of course, we got the news involved, and they were out here the next week.
How long ago was this incident?
I'd have to look that up. I have it here.
Going through a lot of documents of what looks like news articles. So you've been detailing everything that's been happening.
I'm detailing it all because it's been a horrendous nightmare for all of us involved. For the neighbors, for myself.
So this one's from April 15th, 2010, from the Tonawanda News.
Correct.
A 10-pound chunk of debris fell from the CSX railroad overpass. It's only a matter of time before something more serious falls. So this is an ongoing problem for you, then?
Correct.
What has anything else ever fallen? Anything else major? This is from 9 years ago. Has anything else happened?
Concrete falls off of it all the time. Because it, on top of the metal is concrete, and if you go out and look at it, you can see it's all chewed up. And you'll see piles of concrete and stuff like that. I don't know that anyone's ever gotten hurt yet, but it does happen, and CSX doesn't care.
Cheryl, I know you've been here for 20 years. This has been an ongoing issue. I'm sure people can listen to you, read your story, but also wonder, why not just leave? Why not just get rid of this spot and go somewhere else if this is such an ongoing issue?
Well, first of all, I'm at retirement age. So my goal at this point is to get these trucks to stop, and then I'm not sure what I'm doing. I may sell and get out of here. I'm not sure. But for anyone else to want to buy this property, this has to stop.
So is it like a challenge for you at the same time to try to get this issue taken care of, at least before you go?
It is. It is a challenge, but it's also a serious concern of someone getting hurt and possibly getting killed over everything that's going on out there. And I still have my doubts about the structural integrity of that bridge. They said that they had it checked out, but I sure would like to see that in writing. That's just me. I'm right here. They have chemicals that go over here all the time. And if that bridge gives way and those chemicals comes down, it's going to, obviously, it's going to take me out because, you know, it's going to take me out. But it's going to take the whole city out.
What else would you like people to know about your situation here and your thoughts about what happened today? Anything we missed?
No, I'm happy for what happened today. I'm very happy. I don't want anyone to think I'm not happy. I'm just waiting to, like I said, that statement was very vague, so I don't know what they're going to do to enforce and keep this from these trucks coming down here.
Well, I know Rick had said to us on our airwaves today that they're finally trying to fix stupid. That's a start, right?
Mm-hmm, that's a start. I mean, that's hard to fix stupid, but it's a start. You know, it's a story. I just, what are they going to do? Signs? They got 10 signs here. They can't read a low clearance. How are they read no trucks?
There was something that they had mentioned to me before where they thought about putting up kind of like these bars that would, you know, if you hit this, you're going to hit this bridge. What do you think about that measure?
That's what I brought up in... Okay. I brought that up in the Common Council in 2009, and I was shut down. They said that, and matter of fact, didn't they tell us at the Common Council the other day they couldn't do it?
Right, they're
not allowed to do it.
Something falls off of the sign that's hanging over the road.
Right.
Pedestrian. Okay, so just safety concerns and liability concerns.
I had sent them all pictures of
that. Yeah.
Yep, that's the pictures that mm-hmm. we had seen where it says if you hit the sign, you will hit this bridge.
I brought that up in 2009, and I was shut down. I tried to get it taken care of. All they did was put more low bridge clearance signs. But I don't know. I hope that where they have no trucks, there's flashing lights around it or something. I don't want flashing lights that will go through a resident's home. Mm-hmm. So I think they need to be strategically placed. I'm hoping that helps.
It's a tough situation.
And I'm hoping the cops stay on it and monitor it. And, you know, I can send you a video of all the cops pulling over all these trucks, you know. I hope I can.
Also chatted with a nearby resident. You can hear that full interview over at WBEN.com. Coming up, talks about a convention center in Buffalo move forward.
86% of those who responded directly to the question support a investment in saying we should stay in the convention and visitors business and we need to invest in our facility or build a new one.
County Executive Mark Polenkars did get testy at one point after questions were asked about the Buffalo Bills. Find out the full context of that up next. This is 716 Week in Review.
It's Susan Rose from WBEN. Thank you for listening. Starting tomorrow, you will no longer be able to hear any great shows on WBEN on TuneIn. Now, the only place to listen to WBEN is radio.com. Go to radio.com/listen or download the radio.com app now to continue listening to this and many other great radio stations. Make the switch from TuneIn to radio.com today.
Thanks for tuning in to 716 Week in Review. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at News Radio 930. I'm also on the tweet machine. I'm at Mike Baggerman. Erie County Executive Mark Polenkars this week unveiled the results of a public survey regarding a convention center in Buffalo. Here he is on Wednesday highlighting what the county will do next.
As you remember, on September 20th of last year, released a report, the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center and Feasibility Analysis, that identified that the current facility itself was functionally obsolete for the modern convention and visitors business and made a comparison to what would be considered other similar-sized markets to see how we exist with our current facility. And I think you all remember the results of the report. It was not good. Basically, we do not meet the standard as it pertains to the quality of the convention center based on size and some of the amenities that are expected today. This is no disrespect to Paul Murphy and his staff who do an incredible effort, and they always get high marks for the great work that's done at the convention center. But it was when it was built, it was too small. and it was in some ways too antiquated when it was built, and considering it's nearing its 50th year, or 45th year, I think, it is, of course, just too old, antiquated for the needs of modern conventioners, and as well as what we deserve in a community that we have, like Buffalo. So we issued the report, the analysis, that it looked at multiple sites and then drilled down and identified five semifinalists and then, to the extent, two finalists, saying, well, if you do stay in the convention and visitors business, you have the option of basically two locations, one which is an expanded facility in the current location, or a new, brand new convention center to be built in what would be considered more of a waterfront district in the area on Perry Street and Scott Street near the hockey arena. But before we decided to say, okay, well, yes, we need to build a new one, we wanted to hear from the public. And we opened up a 90-day comment period in late September that ran through the end of the year, in which the public itself had an opportunity to review the report and to offer its suggestion as to whether, one, we should stay in the convention and visitors business, and two, if so, where would they propose that the site be? And so that's what that analysis or that online survey took in from the general public. And then we had to go through and go through the results, and that's what's basically happened in January and February. We did receive 668 direct respondents to the question, should we stay in the convention and visitors business? We received over 1,000 additional responses, which were spam. And unfortunately, our staff had to go through that. So it took a little longer than we have liked because they had to go through each one of the responses to ensure that it was an accurate response, categorize it, put it into what kind of response it was. But it was spam, and that's the world we live in today. But there were 668 direct respondents, of which 436, or two-thirds of the individuals, were Erie County residents. And all this information will be provided in greater detail to you. But also, what we wanted to know is where these people reside. So of the 668 that were Erie County residents, roughly two-thirds, or 444, lived in the city of Buffalo. So we did get a great response from individuals who live in the city of Buffalo about this, that issue that's going to affect their community going forward. And then the vast majority of which, the rest, lived in Erie County, and only a very small percentage of the individuals who responded, a total of 4%, were either confirmed they lived outside of Erie County or were unknown. So the vast majority, 96% of the individuals who responded, were actually from Erie County. So I'm very happy we got a good response from individuals that live in our community, because this is a decision that we, the members of the community, are going to have to make in total. So what, and as you see, 86% of those who responded directly to the question support a investment in saying we should stay in the convention and visitors business, and we need to invest in our facility or build a new one. And then there were 14% against. I'm actually considering how we sometimes are resistant to change in this community. I was a little bit surprised it was so strong in favor, but that's the result of the public response. Was 86% support the view that Erie County, the city of Buffalo, should stay in the convention and visitors business. And then when it comes down to what is the preferred site, I'm a little surprised on this, but 64% of those who responded with regards to a preferred site actually have no preference. They did not prefer a site. 25%, or only 130 of the respondents, preferred the HSBC site, the Scott Street, Perry Street site, which would be a brand new facility. And 61, or 11% of the respondents, favored expanded site at the Buffalo Niagara Convention Center. So we went through the review, went through the analysis, and we, of course, don't have an exact picture with what the public really wants with regards to where the facility should be, but I think we do have a strong response with regards to, yes, we need to stay in the convention and visitors business. Yes, we need to be doing a major investment going forward. But where that is, that answer still hasn't been provided. So we got a lot of great response from people in the community, and some notable quotes from some of the individuals. It's a no-brainer to me to build a state-of-the-art facility downtown. Buffalo's resurgence has been phenomenal, and this is the logical next step. I've attended a number of trade shows across the country in both major and small cities, and our current center pales in comparisons to other sites in both functionality and attractiveness. Now is the time to do this. This area has been becoming an attraction and is being recognized by publications and visitors from around the world. It's time to take advantage of this new notoriety as a place to visit. A new convention center will build on that and increase the growing number of travel and tourism. Doing nothing is not an option. Doing nothing effectively cuts off all from the rest of the nation as an up-and-coming destination, which is what we've been saying. If we want to stay in the convention and visitors business, doing nothing is not an option. Now, so the issue is, what's the next step? And because we do not have a definitive overall belief from the public that one location is better than another, we're still going to take a look at both sites. But we have to do a deep dive into both sites at this point. Before we can say, this is the place where we're going to build a new convention center, or we're going to build an addition to the existing convention center, we have to take a look at some key variables to determine whether we choose the right site. And that goes down to everything from looking at utility, water, sewer loads associated with both sites, taking a look at the existing structures on those sites. Are there environmental issues? If there's buildings on the existing sites, is there asbestos? So what our plan is to do is to, we have still over approximately $350,000 in a bonded account that is set specifically to be used for studies for a convention center. And our goal is to go out at, by the end of this month with an RFP to hire a consultant to do a strong, deep analysis to both sites and the current facility to determine, could the is the current facility really worth, in some ways, investing all this new money potentially at the new site? Would we have to invest hundreds of millions just in the current facility with regards to the infrastructure, the HVAC, and other issues that exist with it? And also to take a look at, could it, and there's a proposal out there from Mark Croce with regards to a different type of version, could they, could the current facility even sustain what he proposes? Because he basically talks about putting a new layer on top of the existing facility. We don't know if structurally the facility can even do that, but we can take a look at that just to make certain and see if it is a viable option. So our goal now is to have this analysis done so that by the end of this year, and the goal is to have a final report by late December, we will have an answer as to what is the location that is best suited for a new convention center for this community. Is it a renovation and extension of the current one? Or is it building a brand new one at what is really kind of the waterfront canal side site? And so I believe it's very important that we pass this first step and with regards to the public's response. If we did not hear from the public, we would have been doing a disservice to the public. But I think it's important that we've done that. We have strong support from the public with regards to support of the convention center and continuing in the convention and visitors business. And now it's time to say, okay, it would have been silly to spend money if the public was overwhelmingly going to say no to take a look at the deep dive that we now need to do. And now that we have the public support, I think we need to do that deep dive. We will be going out with an RFP. We'll be seeking legislative approval to support this RFP, to hire a consultant to do this analysis that's necessary to now determine whether, or even if both sites, they could come back and find out that neither site really works well, because maybe we'd have to put all kinds of new electrical and water and sewer at both sites, or we have water table issues at canal side and we have problems with electrical here. So we need to look at those kind of things before we can say this is the site and this is the direction we want to go. And as part of that, we're also going to really request a more specific analysis of what the cost at both facilities would be. The numbers we got from the original consultant were just sort of based on square footage. They really didn't look at acquisition of land. They didn't look at potential demolition costs associated with existing buildings. They did not look at the other issues that we need to do, such as, does this work with the utilities and the street grid? Are there problems that we would deal with that they had not thought of? So as part of this, we're also going to get a much better idea of what the cost would be, which is what we will need because, of course, the county would not be able to do this project on its own. We'd need support from New York State and potentially others, and that's why it's important that we have this information. Of course, we've been working in a partnership with Visit Buffalo Niagara on this project. They were not part of the analysis associated with this report. It was done by the Environment and Planning Office. They were not advised of it until all the numbers were in, everything was completed. So it's not like they were involved in the writing of this and could skew it, but they are an important partner when it comes to our convention center and our convention business. And I know Patrick Kaler has some important information to share about why this is really important. Otherwise, we are sort of ceding ourselves to the convention and business elsewhere. So with that, Patrick. Great.
Thank you very much. Thank you, County Executive Poloncarz. I want to thank our community for really stepping up and providing really fantastic input in this next step to the first phase of the Convention Center study that was released in September. This is a very important topic for our community to be a part of because it is going to be an expensive proposition for our community and our residents. And so I really applaud the county executive and the staff for taking that time to get the public input, really diving into it and looking at it and seeing what type of information and feedback was provided. I just think it's a really important step. But as the county executive said, there's still a long way to go. There's so much more information that needs to be studied that will be important for the next steps to hopefully bringing a new convention center to our community. I think that we are on the brink point of, you know, really doing some fantastic things in our community. And one of the things is meetings and conventions and events in our destination. And what's holding us back right now is our convention center. As we reported back in September that we have lost about 783 pieces of business over the last 5 years due to the small nature of the convention center as well as the physical nature of the convention center itself. Aging and that's, as the county executive said, nearly 45 years old. Since September, excuse me, we have lost an additional 78 pieces of business. Again, these are long-term pieces of business that could go into 2022 when you're looking at meetings and conventions and getting in the routine of their cycles. Again, what are we hearing from them? The size of the convention center, the aging nature of it, but now we have a new issue. The report has been put out there for meeting planners in the country to see that Buffalo is studying the potential of having a new or expanded convention center. Well, they're wondering, why would I bring my meeting to Buffalo at this time when in the future you may have a new convention center? Or what does that mean for us if things are under construction? So it has posed a new hurdle for us to now look at as far as bringing new business to our community. So that's one thing that we're going to be challenged with over the next few months or probably the next few years as this process continues. But it's so important that the county does this right. And the county executive has the full support of Visit Buffalo Niagara, the convention center, our board of directors, to make sure that we do this correctly, that we are looking at all avenues and looking, you know, a little bit more in-depthly into the two sites, looking at the possibility of a third site if need be, if these do not work out. But we are there hand in hand, making sure that this is being done very open, as the county executive has clearly made it his priority to make sure that this is an open process for the community. Because again, this is a very important cog in our economic development, economic impact for our community. And so we are right there with the county, making sure that we do this correctly. But we are encouraged by the results. As I am out and about in our community, I'm not surprised by this because everyone that I meet, whether it's at a partnership meeting, meeting with other business leaders, meeting with our own industry, going into Wegmans. People recognize me because you have me on TV all the time talking about this. And they're like, when are you going to build this convention center? When are we finally going to get this? I have not heard any opposition. And you would think that if there were opposition, they would come right to me and say, you're wrong. We don't need this. We don't want to invest in this. But I would say for me, it's in that 80%, 90% that people are saying, we want this, we need this for our community. So again, I thank the county executive, the staff, for really taking the steps to take this to the next level to make sure that we are competitive in the meetings and convention arena. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Patrick. Just to give you an idea, our timeline with regards to the analysis is to issue the RFP by the end of March, the proposals due by late April, to select hopefully the consultant by late May, and have early June be the legislative approval of the consultant. And the consultant's scope of work would be basically a six-month period of mid-June to mid-December. So this would be pretty pretty condensed and compressed timeline for this type of analysis, and to have a final report by late December. And I think it's important that we send the message that we want to stay in the convention and visitors business. I mean, it's always disappointing to hear we lose business, and as Patrick knows, we meet quarterly. The reports I get show all the new business won, but also new business lost, so to speak, and we talk about that, and we've heard over and over through the years the issues about the convention center. I hate losing new business. I guess we're willing to do it in the short run if in the long run we get something that guarantees that we're going to get a lot new business in the long run. And I don't want people to accuse this administration of ramming through a decision without hearing from the public and making a smart decision. And I think we've taken our time with regards to whether we should be moving forward, and the answer overwhelmingly from my administration and I think the public now is yes. The question is, what's the right site? I just came back from Washington, D.C. at a National Association of Counties conference, I was there, and I saw part of the new Washington, D.C. Convention Center. It's gorgeous. Now, we're not Washington, D.C., but they basically went in and they leveled block after block after block to build this facility. We can't do that here. We're not going to have the support to go in and level block after block after block to build the facility that probably this community deserves. So we've made a decision. We're moving forward. We're going to analyze these two sites. And after that, by the end of the year, we're going to have a preferred site and say, here's what it is. Now let's move forward and get this done. With that, I'll entertain any questions.
Mark, or Patrick, the convention center issue, A, is a generational one. But is it tougher because in the hospitality and tourism industry, it's not like a Ford plant where people can see the cars? You know, you don't know if the person next to you having dinner is from Buffalo or from Wyoming.
Absolutely. We're selling an experience as a Convention and Visitors Bureau destination marketing organization. And so for our residents to see that, they're not always going to recognize it unless it's a military group that's wearing, their hats or their shirts, bowling groups that, obviously are wearing their wear as well. So it's hard for our locals to see that. Most of the time when our locals are going to the convention center, it might be for the home show, the auto show, maybe a banquet. So to understand what it is that the convention center does bring economically, I think it's very hard for our locals to truly understand and appreciate that. I think one of the interesting comments when the original study was released was, well, have you ever seen a convention of more than 500 people come to our community? And as Paul and I have spoken about, in a month we could probably have 10 that have 1,000 or more in our community. And, like you said, you might not understand that somebody sitting next to you in a restaurant is actually here for a convention. But that's just the nature of our business. And I think all destinations across the country struggle with that. But that's why we've been so more forthcoming about putting out those numbers. In our monthly travel pulse, we have actually increased, put in another page, just looking at the breakdown of the business at the convention center, whether it be a banquet or a convention or a trade show, as well as putting the attendance numbers. I know that was an important aspect for the county executive to show how many people are coming in. It's not necessarily about the number of room nights, but how many people are coming into our community over the course of 3 days. And then the economic impact of that, because to be able to show that these pieces of business are coming in now, but if that goes away, what that will mean to our community, but if we grow it, what also does that mean to our community?
I will say people don't realize the size conventions that do come into our community. I get the reports. I see it. We held the U.S. or the North American Homeland Security Conference here not too long ago. And we had about 2,000 visitors from all across North America, including some from the Pacific Islands. And they had a great time. And we have an advantage that no other region has. We have Niagara Falls. And I guarantee you, there's every other convention visit bureau individual like Patrick across the United States who'd love to have Niagara Falls a 15-minute drive from their basically their convention center. We are not competing for conventions and business we should because of the issue associated with our center. We now have a larger hotel stock, and I think that's important. We didn't have it for a while. Now we have a larger hotel stock. We can handle more conventions. But you look at, I've gone to conventions on behalf of the county for NACO, and they're going to what would some ways be peer group, peer communities to Buffalo, but we're not even in the consideration because we just don't have the center like these modern facilities do, whether it's a Columbus or whether it's a Nashville, which those communities aren't really that much bigger than ours. Milwaukee was just named the head of the location for the 2020 Democratic National Convention. Milwaukee is not that much different than us, but they got a nice convention center. So, I mean, there's things that we're not getting into even the ballpark for because we just, nobody wants to come to a facility that's 50 years old and has Wi-Fi problems just because of the age of it and the way it was built, where it was basically built like a fortress. That doesn't work in today's modern conventions. Sorry, Paul. But for the individual who says, no, there's no 500-person conventions here, that's ridiculous because I see the numbers. But we could do much better, and we can't afford to continue to lose business in what is one of the most important sectors of our economy, which is tourism.
What specific steps will you take between now and the end of the year to try and convince not only that 14%, but some of the folks across the street that might not think this is a good idea?
Well, we'll have continued conversations talking about the economic impact. And that's what we're talking about, jobs, and what it means to this greater community. Heck, I mean, I've talked to the people with the auto show and the home show. They feel they need a bigger facility just for the auto show. I mean, if you've ever been to the auto show, you know what it's like there. There's cars everywhere. The only thing they don't have is attached to the top of the ceilings. But, I mean, even the local events that are held there, the people who've involved with them realize that we need a different, a larger facility. So I'm just going to continue to have conversations. Some are going to stick their head in the sand and say, geez, I wish Buffalo was like it was in 1901. And there were horseless carriages were going down with horses, and the horseless carriage was driving by, but they were still dominated by horses. And we wish that everything was exactly like it was in 1901. Well, it's not 1901. It's 2019. And we have to be able to compete in a modern marketplace, and we have to compete against our peer groups. I just say to folks, if you want to continue to see this great rebirth of Buffalo and Erie County, you can't have a convention center from 1970.
How would a downtown stadium affect the placement or planning stages?
Not going to talk about that because that's not what we're considering.
One of the problems downtown is that you don't have a lot of land options to...
Well, we do not have a lot of land options, but I will say this. Most cities don't have a lot of land options, but they also have different rules and regulations that allow them to go in there and take over large swaths of land. We don't. And I think you all know this, the history of this community. If we go in there and we say we're going to knock down three blocks of buildings, it's never going to happen. I mean, we couldn't build a companion span to the Peace Bridge because of birds. We're certainly not going to do it, and I don't want to create a process that goes on and on and on so that nothing ever happens.
With both sites having pros and cons and without having the analysis as of yet, is there one site that you're leaning more toward than the other?
No. They both have pros and cons. There's no perfect site.
What are your plans regarding Mark Croce's proposal? Obviously, it was not one of the two proposals that were recommended by the original study. So it seems like that's something you're going in now, kind of after that first study has been done. So what are you thinking? Are you expecting that Mark Croce's proposal will get the same in-depth look in terms of cost and everything else?
Well, considering the expanded site requires a taking of the back of the Statler anyway, so we have to do the same analysis. So it's really no different. So what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at the current facility, the HVAC, the Statler, and then the other buildings that are there that would have to come down to fit in a facility. But what I think we need to do is we never, ever imagined or fathomed like another level above. Our the people who did the earlier analysis, HVS, we asked them, what about going up? And their general recommendation was no, because it makes it even harder. Because now you're higher. So now you have to take your trucks and go higher, which reduces the amount of footprint. I mean, we'll take a look at it. We're going to ask the consultants to take a look at it. I got a feeling they're going to come back and say it probably isn't feasible, but we will look at it. And the other thing is, we don't know if structurally the current facility could even support that. Remember, it was built for the levels it has. So it's not like it was not built under the assumption that they were going to build a bigger facility above it. So as a result, we'd have to take a look and see engineering-wise, even if the current facility, if that would feasibility work. And remember, all of the heating and cooling and electrical, well, you probably don't know this, but all the heating, electrical, cooling, all that jazz for the convention center operations is not in the basement. It's on the top. It's basically on the roof or like a mezzanine level next to the roof. So if you were to build something above it, you literally would have to, of course, have a tremendous impact on that, which means the current facility would probably be shut down during that period. We'll have the consultant take a look at it. But I'm not discounting it, but I also think that there, and Mark told me this personally after he announced it, he said, I didn't look at the engineering. It may not work. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. Okay. I think it's too important a decision to just toss it aside, because we can at least take a look at it. As we're doing this process, because all of the things that we're going to have to look at anyway with the expanded site, such as what do we need to do with the current facility anyway? Would we need to replace all the heating and cooling and stuff like that just because of the expanded site? It's the analysis we'd have to do anyway.
If you're having another consultant come in to look at cost, even though the last consultant didn't have a very, very super granular detailed cost analysis, it was apparent in the HBS consultant study that expanding the existing convention center site will be more expensive. I mean, it's obvious just from looking at the map. We're talking
yes.
about, like you said, the demolition costs, connecting those three buildings. You're working within a very tight, confined city environment compared with the HSBC lot site. I don't know that it would come as a surprise to anyone without consultant being hired. That'll be way more expensive to try to expand on the existing site. I think what the HBS consultant study did was talk about other pros and cons that were more intangible, right? Like surrounding hotels and amenities
yes.
and things like that. So this next study, is it really going to only analyze like infrastructure and cost? Because I think that the answer to that is very clear before, you know,
well, we don't have the answer on the cost.
Okay.
We we're talking about something that estimates, as in the original study, if I remember correctly, I mean, we're talking like $300 million and well above, but it was broad range. And
I mean, is that what it's going to come down to, though, for the county, is a matter of cost? How
no.
much is it going to cost to build?
Well, yes and no. Is it feasible there? Are there issues with the engineering that make it not so feasible, such as would we have to install all kinds of new electrical grid in that area and things like that, and water and sewer to handle what in one would pretty much for both of them have been basically parking lots. And the one's been a parking lot forever. The other one's had some buildings on it, but the vast majority of the site is a parking lot. So I don't want to think people to, you have to remember the original report was a study of the existing facility doing market analysis comparisons, and then what are the other potential sites. The smallest part of the report was cost, because they really didn't look at it. They just said, well, based on the square footage, here's what we think it'll cost. But I will say we never really got an accurate answer. And remember, if one site is $325 million and another site is $525 million, can tell you which one I'm going to prefer.
Why aren't you looking for the support for including in this whole project any major development that may or may not take place in downtown in the next 5-10 years?
I don't, we're talking about anything then. So I don't know what you're saying. other than I've had conversations
with... You said that you don't want to talk about a new stadium, but...
Go talk to the Bills, Dooley. I've talked to them. The only one who wants to talk about a new stadium is the media. Go talk to the Bills. That's my answer to that. I know what it does. It's clickbait. It sells. It's stuff like that.
Nobody else is talking about a potential new stadium.
Talk to the Bills. I have lots of conversations with the Bills, but nobody likes to talk to them and when they answer a question, they don't like their answer, so they don't like to report it.
Patrick, this sort of predates you, but going back to the Geiger era, there was a report at the time talking about Buffalo being able to potentially get as many as 513 different conventions if we had a new convention center. You guys know that. Mm-hmm. Do you have a more accurate, updated number as to what a new center or expand center, what it could mean in terms of bookings?
Absolutely. We have looked at the size and scope that the consultants put in. We have a database of potential meetings. That database spits out a number of about 2,400 potential meetings. Then when you break that down a little bit by meetings that would take place in the Northeast that would fall into our rotation, the number is much greater than what it used to be. But that's something that we'll continue to look at and monitor. But one of the other things that we need to look at is that one of the things that's holding us back from growing our business now is the physical nature of the building, that we can't host more than one meeting at the same time. So we may not get all of the 2,500, 3,000 people, but we might be able to do 2,500 or 2,1,500 meetings at the same time in a new facility. So that, again, will expand those types of meetings that we can bring to the convention center.
Down the line, if the HSBC lot is chosen, what will come of the current facility?
We'd have to entertain that at that point. The county owns the land. We would entertain various options at that point, but of course, we would not hold conventions there anymore. And I think the long-term option would eventually be the cleaning of that site and making it available for shovel-ready development of some sort.
Anything else, guys?
I got a question.
There's been studies that have come out that have talked about improving public transit in the city. Is there anything that you would look in regards to a new convention center for improved public transit before the site is either revamped or rebuilt?
I think that's something that will be, clearly looked at as we go through this process, is how you're moving people around the community. Most meeting planners don't want to have transportation as far as shuttle buses are concerned. We've been already speaking to several meeting planners. We have a customer advisory council of meeting planners that have booked business here that are current clients or who have never brought a meeting to Buffalo in the past. And they were here for the unveiling of the study back in September. We specifically asked them the questions about the HSBC lot because there are right now only 300 committable hotel rooms in that area. And looking at the rest of the community, they said, at least you have the free metro. It's also very walkable. Buffalo is, the majority of our time in our community. And they said they don't really see that as a problem for our community as far as being able to walk or get on the free metro, that there is the transportation opportunities there. Plus, now that we have rideshare, we have taxis readily available. So that's not necessarily a problem. But I'm sure, as this process continues, transportation will clearly be looked at and how we move people around.
You heard the county executive get testy about a downtown stadium. We also did a story that we're not going to highlight on our podcast here about whether the stadium will have an impact on future studies for a convention center. Legislators we spoke with, including April Baskin and Joe Larigo, said that it's going to be largely determined whether or not the Pagulas will in fact entertain the downtown stadium. We did report previously that CAA Icon has reached out to fans inquiring about a downtown stadium, but it might be a little bit premature for the county to go into those talks about a downtown stadium study. Coming up, our final top stories we'll be highlighting this week, a Buffalo firefighter is on the up and up.
I'm feeling better and getting better every day.
Find out what happened to the firefighter and how he's doing next.
Sandy Beach is heard here.
Yes, you can get a Delta kitchen faucet. Can be turned on through Amazon's Alexa voice assistant. These things are unbelievable. How have I lived without them? I really don't understand. Private label push to Amazon has been building its own brands, of course, because I think Amazon wants to take over the world. Amazon could be the next superhero in a Batman movie, don't you think?
Sandy Beach, weekdays 9 till noon. News Radio 930 AM WBEN.
Okay, our final top story of the week. An injured firefighter from the Buffalo Fire Department speaks out. He suffered third-degree burns while battling a fire on Butler Avenue on January 10th. The firefighter in question here, Eric Whitehead, he explained what happened when he was hit by debris and became disoriented while battling the blaze.
I've been out of the hospital since February 11th, and I've been continuing my occupational therapy 3 days a week at ECMC. I'm feeling better and getting better every day, and I want to thank so many people, the doctors and the staff and everybody at ECMC. I want to thank all of them. They supported me from the community, and it's been overwhelming. And, of course, my brothers from the Buffalo Fire Department. They have been there for me every step of the way. And as I said, they saved my life that night.
Alrighty, folks, if you have some questions for Firefighter Whitehead.
Firefighter Whitehead, it's Tom Parker here at WBEN. Eric, what went through your mind as you were fighting that fire that night?
Well, through my mind, after I was hit with something and I was disorientated, I just relied on my training to stay calm because I knew my brothers were close.
Okay. How was your family and your home life different since this incident?
Well, everybody's a little on edge as far as me, going back to work. And when I do return, just more so, a little bit more worried and more cautious. But they'll be okay.
Mr. Whitehead, Kara Spelger, Channel 2 News. I want to ask, what's been the most difficult part of your recovery this far?
Well, the therapy, because I'm usually very active, and just how long the therapy may take, and how slow the progression is. It's just rough for me, because I'm a real big gym person and athletic, and just want to get out there and do so many things, but I got to go through the process.
What can you do now? This is Jane Kwiatkowski from the Buffalo News. What can you do now that you could not do, like let's say a month ago?
I could put on my sock.
Great.
Some doorknobs I can turn, some can't. But, just little things like that. Nothing real major at this point.
Right.
Okay. Angela Camorson, News 4. How do you navigate your daily life, with this kind of injury? Do you have, folks at home helping you, or...?
I got a lot of support from everyone, and I'm not really jammed up with anything like that. So, got a lot of support. My support team is excellent.
Speaking of support, can you just tell me how much it means to have that firefighter community there for you, and not only on the night of the rescue, but this entire two-month-long journey?
It's just been overwhelming, All I got to do is pick up the phone, and everything I ask there is usually done before I even ask. It's just right there, and, I can't thank them more tonight. I'm almost speechless.
On the night of the rescue, do you remember that moment when your brothers showed up to get you out of that house?
Yes, I remember that moment. I do.
What was that like?
It was a feeling that is hard to explain. And almost like hitting the lotto, because I knew they were coming. And when they got there, I was overjoyed. And think about it every day.
Angelica Morrison, News 4. Have you ever fought a fire similar to this one?
Yes, I have.
And what was that like?
It was the same. It's always real hot and dark. You usually can never see anything.
Commissioner Ronaldo, it's Jane Kwiatkowski from the Buffalo News. Hello? Has there been any changes to protocol at a fire scene because of this injury?
Yeah, actually, that's a great question. You know, anytime a member is injured, and in this case, you know, a severe injury, we always, you know, we take a look at ourselves. Obviously, we take, you know, we do a self-assessment, and we're working diligently right now with our training bureau and the division chief, the town chief, and our company officers, and looking at our SOPs and even more specifically, our techniques and procedures as far as going forward.
I'm sorry, what's an SOP?
When we have a similar incident like this. So, yes, we take a hard look anytime a member is injured and as far as what we're doing, how we're doing it, yes.
So nothing has been done as of yet? You're researching it?
Yes, as I said, it's ongoing, and, you know, we actually formed a committee, a safety committee, and we're looking at all aspects of this incident, you know, just going forward to make sure, you know, not only doesn't happen again, but, you know, actually limit the extent of the injuries to the members.
Thank you.
Eric, this is Avery Schneider from WBFO. Have you ever been in a position where you had the opportunity to save a fellow firefighter's life?
Not yet. I can't say that I have at this point. But I've seen it.
Are you looking forward to getting back on the job? Is that something that's likely to happen?
Yes. I want to go back.
Folks, if I may for a second, I'm going to have Firefighter Whitehead just take you through those moments when they arrived on scene and then going to one of the upper floors and then going from there and taking you folks through that. Firefighter Whitehead?
So on that night, the fire tones rang off, and the address that it said was in our district, so I knew that was us. We hopped in a fire truck. We responded. When we get there, the whole street was filled with smoke. It was hard to tell where it was coming from at first. But when we got there, we seen it coming out of the second floor. But I wasn't sure whether the second floor or the attic, so we took the hose line to reach the attic just to be sure. We entered the house. We got in there, and the fire was in the attic, and it was, you know, real hot, and visibility was low. Get to the attic stairs, and we mask up, and we're fighting a fire. And that's when I was hit by some debris. It knocked my helmet off, and I lost the hose line. And luckily, I reached right out, you know, a couple times, and my helmet was right there. But soon I got my helmet secure, and, you know, my mask was still on, I couldn't find the hose line. And you know, I was disoriented. That's when my training kicked in, and I, you know, kept calm, kept a cool head, you know, conserved my air, because I knew my brothers were close by, and they saved my life that night.
Any more questions?
Eric, you had... Eric, you have to go in for treatments for your burns frequently. Is it a weekly thing, a daily thing?
Yes, it's a couple times a week. So I'm still, you know, a lot in the recovery mode. Still pain, things of that nature. So
Eric, this is Jane Kwiatkowski from the news again. I was told that you just could not look at your hands when you were, you know, and they did not start hurting until you were outside. Now, there was snow on the ground at that point, or no? When was this?
It was January 10th. I'm not sure about the snow. Well, my hands are better now.
And, yeah.
I'm sorry?
Yes, I said yes, yeah.
Okay, it's good. They're getting better now, and I see improvements in them.
Eric, what's been the most encouraging thing, and what's kept you going since the day of the incident?
I've always been a strong little person, and take a lot to knock me down, and, you know, just me in general, that's just who I am.
Any other questions?
Mike,
Eric,
I've got another
I'm
question. Mike, I've got another
Eric,
question.
I'm curious, have you got any indication how long your recovery will be at all?
I'm not sure at this time. It's going to be a while. I don't have any days or anything for anybody.
Tom, do you have a question?
That was the line of question I was going to have, just wondering how long it was going to be before he would be able to return to the job.
So just a couple of things there, just to make sure from the start. Again, the fire was January 10th on Butler Avenue, went into ECMC for injuries, including severe burns, was there until rehab recovery until February 11th, continues, he's been out since February 11th, and continues that therapy 2-3 days a week, returning to ECMC for that therapy. We will also, once we're done with the call, I will email folks some photos for firefighter Whitehead. Before we conclude, any more questions for either firefighter Whitehead or Commissioner Rinaldo?
Just one more question, Angelica Morrison, News 4. Now, were the injuries just sustained to the hands, or were there other portions of the arm or the torso that sustained injury?
No, just my hands.
And we're very happy to hear that the firefighter is expected to make a full recovery, but obviously a scary thing for those first responders, and a brave Eric Whitehead speaking to reporters, updating his situation. Well, that's it for your top stories of the week. Let's get into some of the stories we didn't have time to get into. Lots of news on the development front, especially at Canal Side. We'll go through some of them right now. Explore and More is set to open in just a few weeks, and the museum plans to put a giant tricycle atop it. The North Odd Block also continues its redevelopment as a design team. T.Y. Lynn International will come up with a design for the mixed-use building in the North Odd Block over the next 4 months. We also inquired about plans to enhance access to the Outer Harbor. You can hear all that development news over at WBEN.com. Buffalo Eastside got a major shot in the arm from New York State. Governor Andrew Cuomo this week was in Buffalo to announce $50 million worth of state funding, including $4 million for the Broadway Market. Members of the 1199 SEIU Union and Kaleida Health called on state leaders to not cut Medicaid. Allen Street in Buffalo began its reconstruction, as here we are in the spring. Expect construction to continue once again. We'll backtrack on that momentarily. The Buffalo Bills signed nine free agents. Who knows? By the time this podcast is done recording, maybe they'll have signed a 10. But as far as we know, it's 9 so far. Some of those, including running back Frank Gore, cornerback Kevin Johnson, center Mitch Morse might be one of the most notable ones there, along with Gore. Lots of others, too. You can see the full list over at WBEN.com. And, of course, our sister station, WGR Sports Radio 550, they're on top of everything. Trust me on that one. Sports news continues. Sabres continue to lose. I don't even know what the scores were this week. I know they lost on Thursday 5-0 to the Penguins. The big takeaway is the team's not going anywhere this season, and there's 12 games left to go, including 4 at home. A restaurant worker at Destiny's on Fillmore Avenue in Buffalo was diagnosed with hepatitis A. That's causing a lot of problems. People had to get vaccines as a result of it. The National Comedy Center in Jamestown officially the nation's comedy center after a vote by Congress this week. Buffalo Bishop Richard Malone's home has sold on Oakland Place for a pretty big price tag, $1.5 million. Shays Performing Arts Center announced their upcoming season. Really, nothing's going to compare to what it was last year when they had Hamilton. By the way, I went to that Hamilton show. Phenomenal. It was also my first time ever at Shays. We look at the indoor athletic facility that's being proposed at Maston Park in the city of Buffalo. Also got a sneak peek at planned redevelopment at the Eastern Hills Mall. Nate Oates, maybe we should call him Nate Goats, the greatest of all time. He gets a 5-year extension. UB Bulls continue on in the MAC tournament. They're playing in the semifinals, I believe, as we speak. Women are also in the MAC championship as the women look to make it into the NCAA tournament. No charges will be filed against a Buffalo police officer after the shooting death of Marcus Neal in December. Consider this headline a PSA of sorts. If you live on Grand Island, you should check your Easy Pass statements because you might be paying more than you should to cross the bridges. The Erie County Department of Health grilled by the county legislature about its policies in wake of the Timothy Bean incident. The legislature also pressed the sheriff's office about its plans for body cameras. Alleged murderer Shane Casado had his bail revoked on Friday. He was remanded with a trial coming in August. Gigi's Restaurant has officially closed for good. And also, I mentioned earlier how we're going to backtrack on reconstruction. Keep your eyes peeled because preliminary work will begin on the Skyway on Friday. Expect construction to start in 2 weeks. That's for this week's edition of 716 Week in Review. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at News Radio 930. I'm on Twitter at Mike Baggerman. Tell your friends, coworkers, family about this podcast. Rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. Get it first by downloading the radio.com app. You can listen to it on demand using your tablet, phone, whatever smart device you have at any time. See you next Friday on 716 Week in Review.